This is Kelly Krager conducting an oral history interview with Mr. Sidney Baird. Today is 2 November 2009. I am in Lubbock, Texas on the campus of Texas Tech University, and Mr. Baird is joining me from Gaston, North Carolina. I'm interviewing Mr. Baird today in order to gain his reminiscences of his time in Vietnam. Mr. Baird served with Marine Medium Helicopter Squadron 165 and was in Vietnam in 1967-1968. Mr. Baird's primary responsibilities were as an aircraft electrician, although he later served as machine gunner and crew chief on CH-46 helicopters. Mr. Baird, to begin this interview, I'd like to ask you some basic biographical information, some background information, if I could. Can you tell me when you were born and where?
January 11, 1944, in Ronald Crappis, North Carolina.
Okay. What were your parents' names?
Pardon me?
What were your parents' names?
Oh, Sidney Baird. My father's name was Sidney Baird. He was in the Army in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother's name is Ella.
Ella. Very good.
Lost my dad, so I'm staying with her now.
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
I've got four brothers and sisters.
Four brothers and sisters. Now, where are you in the line of progression? Oldest,
the
youngest?
Top of the line.
You're top of the line, of course. I should have known.
Yeah, I've been telling a long time that I pick on my brothers and sisters because Mama kept ahead of me, and then she kept right on trying to have another one just like me. Finally, had my little baby sister. They gave up.
What did your parents do for a living?
Well, they work in a little cotton mill here. Like I said, my dad's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's 87 years old, so I'm staying with her. I mean, she's looked after me for 65 years, so it's time for me to look after her, right?
Yeah, that sounds like a very fair trade to me.
Like I said, my dad passed away about 12 years ago, and my dad was a tight person, and I feel like I inherited this. He would give his last dollar to somebody in need.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody tried to steal a nickel from him, bam, he got a fist fight on the hand.
Right.
He was just that tight person.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that your dad was in the Second World War. Did he serve in Europe, or was it the Pacific, or where did he serve?
He was in the Army. I know he was overseas.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he was wounded over there. They put him in the hospital, got him out of the hospital, and right back out on the front line.
Is that right?
I was 17 months old before my dad ever saw me.
Wow.
I was born 3 weeks after he went overseas.
Hmm.
Yeah, I tell you what, I miss him.
I bet. Did your dad serve in the Pacific or Europe?
I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
He was in on the East Coast here.
Well, that's okay. Now, you were, you say you were born in 1944, and
right.
your parents worked, both your parents worked at the cotton mill?
Right, uh-huh.
Okay. Now, what did they do with the cotton mill?
Tell you the truth, I don't know, just machine operators.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if you can, describe your childhood there in North Carolina. What was it like? What sort of things did you like to do, the family situation, things like that?
Well, I loved to play football in high school. Smallest guy on the team and voted most valuable player.
Is that right? What was your position?
Running back.
Is that right?
Yeah. But, I was real popular in that. I got out of that. Rather than going into the military, I went to college.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school?
A local college here.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a big one. It's just I can't think of the name of it. My memory is terrible, man. Some things.
Sure. What did you want to do in college? Did you pursue a degree? What were you studying?
Well, I ended up going to college as an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what helped me tremendously. When I joined the Marines, I was about to be drafted, so I joined the Marines. And my experience as an electrician helped me tremendously. That's why I was selected as an electrician on the helicopters, you know.
Okay, were you able to finish your degree before you left?
I don't think I did. I don't think I did finish my degree. You know, this was in 64 when Vietnam was getting pretty hot. And I don't think I finished my... I was in working for a company here, plastic blow molding company. And I had started an training system to have. In other words, the way I looked at it, I'd rather train this hardworking, devoted general helper. I'd rather train him to be a mechanic, electrician, than to hire an electrician off the street. You know, so I even taught at community college.
Oh, really?
Apprentice program. While working, I'd select the young guys and then train them to be mechanics. That's time passed.
While you were growing up there in North Carolina, did you pay attention to world events in terms of the United States and the Cold War and issues like this?
I think so, but I don't. That's been a long time ago. Yeah, that's one thing I've been diagnosed with too, is Alzheimer's.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I inherited it from my dad, I guess, because he had it. And but they say I went to the VA hospital up in Richmond. They said they're going to nip it in the bud. I chew them out every time I go up there. It didn't work yet. Because that's forgetful, you know. Well, these are some things when I was in the Marine Corps that I don't think I will ever forget.
Okay, well, let's talk about your time with the Marines. When did you join the Corps?
I was about to be drafted to the Army. And this is in 64.
Okay.
I was about to be drafted to the Army, so I joined the Marines.
Why did you choose the Marines?
Why did I join the Marines?
Yes, sir.
I don't know. I felt like they were the best at the time. I still do. I'll tell you. Let me read this first section on this speech I made.
Okay, please do.
It says, my memory is terrible, especially when it comes to names. But these are some of my Marine Corps experiences that I will never forget. Thanks to Pop Smoke, a lot of these memories have been revived. Pop Smoke is the greatest organization I know of. As I said, God willing, I will not miss another reunion. I'm proud to be a Marine, and I'm proud to have served my country in Vietnam. I will do anything within my power to help today's military, which reminds me of something that I wish I could forget. When I returned from Vietnam in 68, a lot of the public here were protesting the war and blaming the military. Whether or not it was right or wrong, the military should not have been blamed. We over there risking our lives fighting for our country. Another thing is today's media. Get home, turn on the news, and the first thing you see is 6 more killed in Iraq today. What does that do to people who have loved ones over there? They pray that it wasn't their son, father, or so. While in Vietnam, I had my loved ones here convinced I was over there laying on the beach having a good time, as safe as they were. I looked at it like this. Why should my loved ones suffer when there was nothing they could do? I had everyone convinced except my mother. She had gone through World War II with my dad, and she knew me very well. I was born 2 months after my dad went over to fight in World War II. I was 17 months old before he ever saw me. I have in a frame my first birthday card from him. I'm proud to say that I inherited the type person I am from my dad, Sidney Baird Sr. My dad would give his last dollar to someone in need, but someone tried to steal a penny from him, they had a fight. But that's the first paragraph of that interview. And
mm-hmm.
So that kind of tells where I got started.
Right.
And when I get an address, I'm going to send you a copy of that one-page speech and the other three pages of experiences.
Well, please do.
In fact, you got a email address I can send it to?
Yes, it'll be on the business card that I will put in the mail to you today.
All right, good. I'll send you a copy of that.
Oh, terrific.
Now, what is your organization?
We are the Vietnam Center and Archive at Texas Tech University.
Oh, okay. Vietnam Archive.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'll never forget it. I build golf clubs.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a niece whose husband just got back from, well, he made two tours, I think one in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. Then he had two tours over there.
Mm-hmm.
He just got back. But he was over there the first time. I saw my niece in church. Did Uncle Junior. Mike asked me the other day if I could get a couple of clubs from you, a couple of wedges, to send to him so he has something to do in his spare time. I tell you what, sleep that night. All I could think about was Vietnam. Next morning, I got to my shop. I boxed up 8 wedges, pitching wedges, sand wedges, lob wedges, gap wedges, both right-handed and left-handed. I put 8 dozen balls in there, put him a copy of this speech, and wrote him a letter. I tell him to share these with his buddies. And one of his paragraphs in the letter said, when Nicole said you need something during your spare time, all I could think about was Vietnam. I said, the only thing I had to do in my spare time, I put in parentheses, of course, I can't complain because I picked my buddies. But I shipped them to Iraq, and my niece tried to pay me for the clubs. But not clubs.
Mm-hmm.
She tried to pay me later, and I flat refused. I didn't put it to her in these words. As far as I'm concerned, those guys already paid the price. And it took about 3 weeks to get those clubs over there. Then I get a full-page email from Mike thanking me for those golf clubs.
Mm-hmm.
He said, because of those golf clubs, I have become the most popular Marine over here.
Well, that is certainly very generous of you to do that.
I support our military all I can.
Yes, sir. Well, if I could, Mr. Baird, let me take us back to 1964. When you joined the Marine Corps. Can you tell me about the basic training? What do you remember about basic training there?
In this speech I'm sending you, I'm going to read another paragraph, a shorter one.
Okay.
When I joined the Marines in 1964, I didn't know they had an air wing. We had a room full of recruits in Raleigh, North Carolina, waiting to be put on a train to Parris Island. They had already scared the out of us. This man in uniform comes to the door and yells, Baird, scared the daylights out of me. I went up to him in attention and said, yes, sir. He said, a recruit to qualify for avionics didn't show up. Test score showed you qualified. Do you want it? I didn't know what he was talking about. I was afraid to say anything but, yes, sir. What luck. There was nothing that could compare to United States Marine Corps boot. I got there. I was a little 160-pound boy. When I graduated, Muhammad Ali could have said the wrong thing to me and I'd have kicked his butt. None there, but that's what I did learn in the boot camp, though. They will make a man out of you.
How did they do that? What sort of things do you remember from boot camp?
Making you do things you never thought you could do, physical things. Yeah, it's been a long time ago, but I know it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
And to brainwash me, too, I guess, because like I said, Muhammad Ali could say something.
Well, I think that's the attitude that they certainly try to instill in you.
Yeah.
It sounds like it worked. Now, where did you go to boot camp?
All right. Like I said, I want to get that this copy to you. Oh, the first page of it, too, is full of what I got written down here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm trying to find some of my old buddies. That was the advice I gave to those Marines in church.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you Marines some advice that can possibly help you later on in life. Trust me, when you reach my age, you start losing your memory. So take my advice and write down the names and addresses of your Marine buddies now. Keep it in a safe place. But before I read that, I said I'm also trying to locate some of my old Marine Corps buddies, especially Terry Rush.
Mm-hmm.
We served together at Checker Point from 64 to 66, 67, actually, in VMGR 2002. In 67, we went to Vietnam together, but they split us up. They assigned him VMGR 152 and sent my butt up north on the HMM 165 helicopters. I've heard that he stayed in and retired. If you can help me find and locate Terry or any of my other buddies, I would deeply appreciate it. Now, I got another one. I hadn't been back long in 68.
Mm-hmm.
69, I was back here about a year, and my wife gave birth to my son. They were named him after me, Sidney III, and nicknamed him Skip, after another one of my best buddies was killed. Frank Waller, nicknamed Skip.
Mm-hmm.
I was told that he was killed. I was going through this Papa Smoke membership list, and it got him in there by states and all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through that, and it had my alphabetical order. Went through the W's, and that's Frank Waller. I almost had another heart attack.
Wow.
But I called that number right then. I think it was up in Ohio. I called that number then. Frank's wife answered the phone. That was Skip Waller.
Wow.
And so I reunited with him. And I tell you what, I hold it to him, against him too, because I named my son after him. Thinking he was dead. My son's name is Sidney III, nicknamed Skip.
Mm-hmm.
And, I hold that against him to this day. So you and me big time to name a son after you. I like these reunions.
Oh, sure. Sure.
For a long time after I got back from Vietnam, I couldn't, if I'm sitting in a room full of people, they start talking about Vietnam War, I'd get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't talk about it, and that case shut me up.
Well, let me take you back to your early time there in the Marine Corps. Do you know where you went to boot camp?
Yeah, Parris Island.
In Parris Island, okay. And you were at the basic time there. How long was boot camp then?
13, 14 weeks, mm-hmm. I guess. Like I said, my memory's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about forgot.
After boot camp... Where did you go for AIT?
I went down in Florida.
Okay.
Well,
that's
somewhere
okay.
In Florida for training.
Mm-hmm. What kind of training was it?
Well, actually, once they diagnosed, figured out I was smart enough to be an aircraft electrician. That's when I went to school, too, to be an aircraft electrician.
Okay. Now, is that the training you received in Florida?
I think so, yes.
Okay. And as you mentioned, you had some training in college in electronics as well.
Yeah, that was before I went in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I went in the Marine Corps. I was already, must have been 20 years old. I'd been out of high school for 2 or 3 years, you know, and I was about to be drafted to the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no way, you know, I ain't going to the Army. I'm going to go in the Marine Corps. You know what Army stands for, don't you?
Well, what is it?
A-R-M-Y. Ain't ready for the Marines yet. I got it in this letter, too. I'm going to send you.
Very good, very good.
Ain't ready. I pick on the other military a lot. But you don't pick on somebody you don't like.
Right, right. What did you hope to do once you received this training? What did you hope to do in the Marine Corps? Was there a special place you wanted to go? What did
well,
you hope to do?
Actually, I did, and I went there. I went to right here in North Carolina after my training.
Mm-hmm.
Because while I was in Florida, in Jacksonville, Florida, that's what it was.
Okay.
Going to school down there for the C-130s, okay? I was going to school down there, and I'd come up here about every couple of months. And my girlfriend, well, I knocked her up.
Okay.
I couldn't help it. I mean, I went crazy. My girlfriend hadn't seen her in a month, you know. And by the way, her stepfather at the time, my wife's stepfather at the time, he was the meanest man I've ever known, and he was a Marine.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Fred Twyford. And so when she got pregnant, she was still in high school. I had to sneak up here. In fact, I came up here on a weekend. That weekend, she got out of high school, and we eloped. We'd already got married a few weeks before that. And kept a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And we went back to Florida. Oh, and by the way, we were only allowed, I think, 200-mile radius from the base of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
That's our limit for a 2-day weekend. I'd come up here about 600 miles. When I got back down there with my bride, as soon as I got on base morning, these Marines are coming to me and saying, man, they're looking for you. CO's looking for you. And they warned me ahead of time that they had heard that I was out of bounds. And sure enough, I got called in at CO's office as soon as that Monday morning. And as soon as I walked in, he said, forget it. I'm going to let it slide.
Oh, really?
He found out the real reason why I came up here.
How'd he find out?
One of my buddies finally told him why. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he heard that I had come up, you know. Then he started asking around about it. And one of my buddies had told him that the reason I'd knocked up, came up here to get a car back down there. I tell you what, glad I knocked her up. 44 years old, man. She is something else. Got my 3 grandchildren.
So, your girlfriend, or your new wife, she was still in high school when you married her?
Yeah.
And
I
you took.
I came up here and we got married.
Mm-hmm.
Her older sister signed for us to get married.
Hmm.
But she had 3 weeks left in high school. So I didn't take her home, take her back down that end.
Mm-hmm.
And, her older sister knew about it. She signed for us to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Stepped us out. So I just came up here 2 weeks later. I rented an apartment down in Jacksonville. Made arrangements down there. And when I got there, he had called the headquarters, Marine Corps headquarters.
Now this is her father?
Yeah, her stepfather.
Okay.
He was the meanest SOB I've ever known in my life. And he was in the Marines. But he had called the Marine Corps headquarters, D.C. He was after my butt when he found out I left with his stepped on them. But, and they knew that at Jacksonville, so they told me to forget it.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what was going on, you know. So, and we were married for 25 years. We're not married now, but we had to stay friends because we've got two children and four grandchildren.
Oh, wow, that's terrific. What did her father do? Did he ever get used to the idea of you being married to his very young stepdaughter?
Well, I was a little scared to go around him, but, yeah, he finally accepted. Of course, he's been gone now a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He's been dead 15, 20 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you're in AIT, you're in Jacksonville, and you've got some kind of future mapped out for you. You're working on electronics, you're working with C-130s, you're brand new married. What did you hope would happen with your career at this point in the Marine Corps? Was Vietnam on the horizon? Was it something you thought you could avoid? Did you want to go to Vietnam?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I ain't bragging, but my name kept coming up on the list for Vietnam, and the CO kept pulling strings to keep me there, kept me from going to Vietnam. And yeah, you know, not many people believe that, but they did. But I had a little advantage over the rest of them because I went to college before I went into the Marine Corps, so I already had a degree, you know, and was experienced. And when I got down to Florida, got in the Marines, I was a chief electrician.
Okay.
I was chief electrician. And until I went to Vietnam, and I got one of those paragraphs in my speech here. I had a good friend over there at Cherry Point, North Carolina, on C-130s, Terry Rush. He's the other one I'm trying to find. Well, our names kept coming up on the list for Vietnam, and the CO kept pulling strings to keep us there. But like I said, I was more or less the chief electrician on C-130s. You know, going to college before I went in the Marine Corps. Well, he calls in there one day. He said, "Guys, they putting the pressure on me. One of you is definitely going. Probably both of you, but one of you is definitely going now." He said, "I'll let you know tomorrow." Well, I got talking to Frank about it. And I told him, I said, let's both of us go. Let's stay buddies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Terry Rush.
Mm-hmm.
And we left Cherry Point and went to Florida on our way to Vietnam. Had to go to some jungle training in California.
Mm-hmm.
We left. Right, thinking we'll stay together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We decided both, we told the CO, said, "Sir, send us both. We'll be together." Got to Vietnam, they put him in the thing on the C-130s and sent my butt up north on CH-46 helicopters. The only R&R I took while in Vietnam, no, I did take one more. But the only time I'd get a break, a day or two, you know, I'd hitchhike down to Da Nang and visit Terry. But I never took leave while I was over there. Never had a break. And the CO came to me one day. We had to make a modification on the C-130s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they hadn't been out long then. And we had to do a modification to all of them. We had about 30 or 35 helicopters. And he came to me, since I was a chief electrician, I was head of the electric shop. He came to me as a Sarge. What we got to do is send all the little shuttle two at a time to Okinawa. And I'm going to leave it up to you. I'm going to have a good electrician and a good mechanic to send over there. It's going to take probably 6 weeks. Well, he said, "Now, let me know tomorrow." Next day, I went into his office and handed him a piece of paper with two names on it. See, I'd been over there 7 months then. He looked at me and said, wait a damn minute. I didn't tell you you could go. I said, sir, I've been here 7 months with no R&R. I need a break. And I will never forget Okinawa. In fact, over that 7 weeks, I hadn't been over there no time for the Marines who were stationed there.
Mm-hmm.
They carried me down to BC Street. I don't know if you ever heard of that or not.
No, sir.
BC Street, that's where the, well, prostitutes and all that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been 7 weeks, 7 months without a woman. They carried me down to BC Street. And it's in that letter that I'm sending you. I bet my fingerprints are still in the urinal pipes over there. They caught the clap. I'll never forget it either. That's just some of the experiences that, like I said, I got a poor memory.
Mm-hmm.
But those are things, the Vietnam stuff, that I will never forget.
Sure, sure.
And for a long time, man, I couldn't watch any military on television. And if I'm in a room full of people and start talking about Vietnam, I'd get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Nanny can't shut me up.
Well, that's good for our purposes today, for sure.
Yeah.
If I can, let me go back here. Now, you're married, the assignment has come down. You're going to go to Vietnam. What was that like for you and your wife, your family?
Well, my daughter won't be a year old.
Mm-hmm.
She's 17 months old. And you imagine how hard it was for me to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But
how about your wife? How'd she take it?
Well, she took it all right.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want me to leave, but you know, we were only married 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not then, but we just got married.
Right.
But
so
we had to stay friends because mm-hmm. we got two kids and four grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
That we have to stay friends now to this day.
Sure. Well, tell me about leaving the United States and going to Vietnam. What was that trip like for you?
Well, the worst thing was leaving my little baby here.
Mm-hmm.
But, like I said, I was going over there and fight for my country. And the feelings I have there, I feel like I inherited from my dad. Like I said, he was wounded in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He would help anybody. He was just that type of person.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is what I believe you're in country from, I think it's June of 1967 when you arrived?
Right.
Okay. Right. Where did you fly into? Did you fly into Da Nang?
I think so, yeah. I flew into Da Nang, and that's where they split me and Terry Rush up.
Okay. Now,
put him on C-130s there
and
sent my butt up north.
How did they come to that determination? How did they decide what outfit you're going to be with?
I don't know. I don't remember that.
And when you got to Da Nang, they told you that, okay, you guys are going to split up and you're going to go up north.
Yeah, they just had me orders for going up north and him stay at my house. They didn't say anything about splitting us up.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I took a couple of breaks and went down to Da Nang and visited Terry.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get in touch with him now.
So you wind up with the HMM 165. Now you're with the helicopters here.
Right.
You'd been training on C-130s, the airplanes, right?
I've been working on them for 2 years.
Yeah, so what was it like, this transition to helicopters? Did you know anything about them?
No. Never been on one.
Yeah. Was it difficult to make the transition?
Well, I don't think so. Like I said, I'd already been to college before I went into the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And I got an electrical background, and that helped me in the Marines, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Where were you stationed up there? Do you remember?
Where? With, in Vietnam?
Yes, sir. With HMM 165. Was it Marble Mountain?
I was in all different places. I don't remember the.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Dubai. In fact, I was put out on my outfit, was put out at the biggest battle of Vietnam, the Tet Offensive.
Mm-hmm.
They put my outfit out on a carrier escorting a Navy hospital ship. I think it was a Repose.
Mm-hmm.
For 7 weeks. Forget this. It's in this letter.
Mm-hmm.
It says, I'll never forget it. I mean, that's for 7 weeks, all we did was pick up dead and wounded.
Wow.
Dropped the wounded off at the hospital ship. Dead in a freezer on the carrier.
Mm-hmm.
What I went through is, that's one reason I support our today's military. I pick on the Army, but I support them.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure.
You don't pick on somebody you don't like.
Right, right. What was it like, if you can tell me, what was it like for you to join this new outfit up there?
Well, it was. I was expecting to be on the C-130s, where
mm-hmm.
I was experienced. And I don't know. I think because I was rated kind of high because of my education, they needed somebody like that on the C-130. I mean, on the helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was in more or less in charge of maintenance on them.
Mm-hmm.
While I was in Vietnam.
So what would be your daily routine there with this outfit working on helicopters? What would you do from the time you got up to the time you laid down that night? What would be your routine?
I don't remember.
Okay. All right. Well, if we can then, you mentioned the Tet Offensive a moment ago. Of course, this is late January, early February of 1968. And, of course, the Marines saw so much fighting up in that part of the
right.
country, in northern South Vietnam, there in I Corps. What do you remember about this offensive beginning? How did you learn about it? Before we were cut off there, Mr. Baird, I'd ask you about the Tet Offensive. Do you remember how you found out about it, and what were the activities within which you were involved?
Well, I've got it in this speech that you're going to be getting.
Mm-hmm.
It says, Tet, during the Tet Offensive, my outfit was put on a carrier escorting a Navy hospital ship, Repose. For several weeks, all we did was pick up dead and wounded. That was an experience I hope no one ever has to go through again. While there, I met this young sailor. He got a Dear John from his girlfriend. He jumped overboard and committed suicide.
Wow.
I'll never forget that. I don't know his name. But he got a Dear John from his girlfriend
mm-hmm.
and committed suicide.
Wow.
But like I said, that's in that letter
mm-hmm.
that I'm going to be sending you.
Okay. So during the offensive, you were with the, you weren't just fixing the aircraft. They called you in to actually be on the aircraft to help take care of this duty of dealing with the dead and the wounded?
Right. Well, I was the chief electrician.
Mm-hmm.
But for $50 more a month, I think it was, I flew as machine gunner. Crew chief of machine gunner, you know.
Okay.
I didn't have to fly.
All right. What was your gun on the CH-46?
I think it was CH-46 helicopter
mm-hmm.
gun. I forgot what the gun was.
Sure, sure. Okay. Can you, as you were so busy during this time and dealing with this very difficult duty, did you find yourself under fire at any time? Did you experience any combat while you're going through this? It seems that we're destined to deal with some technical difficulties today. Anyway, if you could, I was asking you the question, and if you can remember this, While you were moving the dead and wounded from the battlefield to the repose, were you ever involved in any combat? Were you fired upon while you were doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that if you can.
I'll tell you about it. It's fact. It's on this thing that I'm going to send you.
Okay.
It's Captain Romero. I only had about 3 weeks left in Nam. We were transporting about 100 Marines to this hill, Ashall Valley, I think. As you know, we always flew with at least two choppers. We had the last 9 Marines in my chopper. I was port side machine gunner, about 4 feet behind the president, the pilot, Captain Romero. As we were hovering to land, I was leaning out over the gun. Suddenly, incoming machine gun fire. As you well know, you can tell the difference in incoming and outgoing. I jumped back behind the gun. I could hear somebody yelling. I looked up front. The co-pilot was yelling. Captain Romero was leaning to the aisle with a stream of blood coming off his face. I ran up to him, snatched the helmet off, hit a little hole in the left side of his head, and the right side was just busted. I clamped his head in my hands, and we crash-landed. I held his head until we had got him into the other chopper. I heard that he was still living the next day, but I'm afraid he didn't make it. We returned to our chopper and was able to fly back to the base. If I could remember correctly, there were 14 bullet holes in our chopper. On the way back, all I could think about was my 3-year-old daughter that I had not seen in a year. As soon as we got back to base, I went to the CO and asked him to please take me off of flight pay. I want my next flight to be coming back to the world. That was a section there that I'll never forget.
That's pretty powerful.
Pardon?
So that's very powerful.
It is. But like I said, these are some of my experiences that I'll never forget them.
Was anyone else wounded on this crash landing?
I don't think it was on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our main objective was medevac, picking up dead and wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I remember about that at Cap Romero. I'll never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, he was almost time for him to come back to the States.
Oh, goodness. Well, to shift gears here a little bit, Mr. Baird.
Pardon?
I said, let's shift gears here a little bit, and can you tell me about your life on the base? What sort of things were you doing every day when you weren't on duty?
When I worked?
When you were not on duty.
Oh, play poker.
Played poker.
I picked my buddies.
Did you have the chance to correspond with your wife at home? Did you write letters?
I wrote letters, but now I'm going to tell you what. I've said this before. I write a letter home. It would take 2 or 3 weeks to get here, if it got here. But that was about in World War II, I guess. It ain't like today. I made this comment before, but yeah, they got computers over there in Iraq, Afghanistan. They can talk on the computers.
Right. Well, as you think back on it, what are some of the more memorable experiences you have about your time there?
Well, like I said, that Captain Romero thing, that was one of them. And these on this thing I'm sending you, you'll get a kick out of that, you know. It's 4 pages of it.
Very good.
And things like beer. When I arrived in Vietnam, I inherited 1/4 of a refrigerator. I think Frank Waller, Skip, gave it to me. They had smuggled it over there earlier. Nothing went in that refrigerator but beer. As you know, you couldn't drink the H2O over there because of the purification they had put in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd get up in the morning and brush my teeth with a beer. I bet I drank a tanker truck full of beer. When I returned to the States, I didn't want to touch a beer. About a year later, I drank 2 beers and got high. To this day, I can drink a fifth of liquor, bourbon, and won't get as high as I will off of 3 beers. I might exaggerate things a little bit, but you know
it makes a good point, though.
Right.
Well, tell me about that. When it's time to come home, a lot of people that I've talked to were obviously very glad to be able to end their tour to come home, but they were also disappointed, and some were somewhat saddened by the fact that they had to leave so many of the people that they knew, the people they became friends with. What was it like for you to leave Vietnam?
Well, I was ready. Like I said, I had a little baby here that I hadn't seen in over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted my hands on her so bad what to do. In fact, I'll tell you a little something that happened. I got back to California.
Mm-hmm.
I got back to California. I didn't have but 3 weeks left in the Marine Corps. And like I said, I had a 17-month-old daughter here and a wife that I had not seen in 13 months. Well, I got back to California, and I told this in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
I held up my right hand. I said, and I swear they did this trying to get me to re-up. They told me it was going to take 2 to 3 weeks to process me. You know, a 20-minute job.
Mm-hmm.
They said, and I swear I'll always believe they did this trying to get me to re-up, stay in. Well, they saw the pain that I was in, because I been found I had my baby here, my 17-month-old,
mm-hmm.
and my wife that I hadn't seen in over a year. They made arrangements to fly my wife and baby from Richmond, Virginia, to El Toro, California, still trying to get me to re-up.
Oh, wow.
And I said in that reunion, that interview, I said, I swear to you, I will never forget that first night. Not what you think, man, not what you think. I said, my little baby gone to sleep. My wife's laying there on the bed with nothing on but her panties with sweat rolling off of her. And I'm laying over there next to her with a blanket pulled up, about to freeze. First time I've been in an air-conditioned room in over a year, you know.
Right, right.
Your body adapts to it. It was nothing. It's like today at my shop. I own my own golf shop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have air conditioning in it. I got a heater, but I don't have air conditioning. I have customers come in there. We had some extremely hot days last year. I had some customers come and say, Junior, where are you standing so hot in here? You know what I tell them?
What?
Carry your butt over to Vietnam for about a year. You won't need air conditioning either. I mean, your body adapts to it, and there was nothing to see 115, 18 degrees. Humid degrees over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, once you're back in the States, obviously you're not interested in re-upping with the Marine Corps. What did you want to do with the rest of your life once you got back?
Be with my baby. Be with my wife. I wish many times I had stayed in. I regretted getting out many, many times. But like I said, I don't know if I could have gone through that again with mm-hmm. my little baby and a wife to leave them for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I wish many times I had stayed in the Marine Corps.
What did you like about the Marine Corps?
The Marine Corps.
What did you like about it, the entire thing?
In the entire thing.
All right. Now, you come back home, and it's 1968. Did you keep up with the war after you got back?
Be honest with you, the best I can remember, I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It would tear me up.
Mm-hmm.
If something about Vietnam come on television, I'd have to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't. And if I'm in a room full of people and they start talking about it, I'd get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't talk about it. today, they can't shut me up.
Very good. Well, as you look back on your time in Vietnam, Mr. Baird, what sort of things do you think you came away with? What did you learn about yourself as a result of your time there?
Well, I don't know. I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I support our military now, big time.
Do you think there are any lessons from the Vietnam experience for the United States that you think this country should have learned or that it did learn?
No, I think, I went through all I needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though I was an aircraft electrician and machine gunner, they put me through jungle training.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I thought, you know, why go through this? I'm not going to be in the jungles. But I could have been.
Mm-hmm. And if one of the helicopters you were on was shot down, like it was for you, I would suspect that training would come in a little handy there.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Baird, is there anything else you would like to add to this interview before we put an end to it?
I'd like to get back in the Marine Corps. Like I said, you sent me the address. I'm gonna send you a copy of this thing.
Okay.
And maybe you can find Terry Rush for me.
Well, we certainly have a lot of resources here that we can help people find different units and things like that, so maybe we have something here that could help you out.
Uh-huh.
Well, Mr. Baird, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate one thing from you. I mean, I appreciate your call, but one more thing.
Yes, sir.
Don't call me Mr. Baird. I'm a
junior. Junior. Okay, I will do, Junior. Thank you so much. right. Well, Junior, thank you so much again for your time today. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Step aside.